reading from the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter number 17, entitled The Divisions of Faith, text 24 and
25.
with the word Om, but which is misunderstood by impersonalists. So, of course, Vaishnavas thoroughly understand Hiranmayena Patrena Satyasupi Tamukam Tatvam Pusanapavinu Satyadharma Drishyate from the Isupanishad, that behind the golden effulgence of Brahman is the shining face of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Or, as we find from Raghupati Upadhyaya, a disciple of Madhavendra Puri, we find the description of Shrutim Itare, Bharatam Anye, Aham Bhava Bita, Aham Iham Nanda Vande, Yasya, Yasya, Brahma.
Yasya Vende Param Brahma.
Thank you. So, it is explained that by Raghupati Upadhyaya, I am worshipping, some are worshipping the Shruti, some are worshipping the Smriti, and all, as others, are worshipping the Mahabharat, but all are doing so out of fear. Out of fear because they are pious, because out of fear of karmic reactions. They're worshipping the Lord, thinking, yes, I'd better be good, because otherwise who knows what will happen in this life. And everyone very pious and bowing down and going to temples and asking for this Asirvad and that Asirvad and hoping that nothing will happen. But that is materialistic. And then he said, no, but I am not worshipping any of these scriptures. Not the Shruti. That means the four Vedas or the Upanishad. Not the Smriti. Not the Puranas, not the Itihasas, not the Bharat. No, I'm not worshipping any of those. I am simply worshipping Nanda Maharaj. Oh, why Nanda Maharaj? Because in the courtyard of his house, the Supreme Absolute Truth is playing like a child. See? Now that is the Gaudiya Vaishnava understanding. That was the disciple of Madhavendra Puri, who is the Param Guru of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So that is our line. It is said that Madhavendra Puri was the first one to display the ecstatic symptoms of love of God, which later would become the property of the followers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It's a little astounding that such love of God was manifesting in Madhavendra Puri, whereas we are understanding from Rupa Goswami, Namama Vananyaya Krishna Prema Padaya De, Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Guru Trishna Namaha, that this is a gift of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So the question may be asked, how was it that that love of God first fructified in Madhavendra Puri? The mystery is unraveled in the Kadacha of Murari Gupta, also known as Chaitanya Charita Mahakavya, where Srila Murari Gupta is saying that Madhavendra Puri is the Shakti Avesh avatar of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So simply, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was manifesting through him and was using him as an instrument, although Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had not yet appeared on the planet. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, being eternal and being the eternal Supreme Personality of Godhead, was simply, before his appearance, manifesting himself through Madhavendra Puri. And thus this ecstatic love, this ecstatic understanding manifested in him. And thus it is not astounding that his disciple, Raghupati Upadhyaya, had such understanding that actually worship of the Supreme Absolute Truth, Param Brahma. So when we're speaking about Om, we're ultimately referring to Param Brahma. Because the effulgence of the Lord, that is explained in Chaitanya Charitamrita. there's a description about the difference between Vivartavat, which is the understanding of Mayavat, the philosophy, is it a rope, what is it, a snake? What are we seeing in the dark? It looks like a snake, but is it a snake, or is it a rope? In other words, are we seeing one thing, but actually it is another? So Shankaracharya was using this analogy because his point was that the absolute is always absolute, and therefore the absolute cannot change. And therefore, when we see that it has changed, it must be illusion. Therefore, there is only Brahman, says Shankaracharya. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu argues the Shakti Parinamavat and is saying that Brahman, it is a misunderstanding that Brahman is the Supreme Lord. Shankaracharya is arguing that Brahman cannot change because it is the Supreme Lord. However, it is not the Supreme Lord. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says it is the Shakti. It is the energy of the Supreme Lord. And because it is the energy, it can change and can produce byproducts. Therefore, Shakti Parinamavat. Parinam means results. Or the byproducts, or the transformations. And this is what we find confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam. Jalmadiyasiyatum viyat itardas chatesvam kisarat tene brahmadidaya adhikaviye muyantiyat suryaham. Explain that everything is emanating from the Supreme Lord. Everything has its beginning in the Supreme Lord, and yet that Supreme Lord exists independent. He is abhigya, he is all-knowing, but he is at the same time swarat, independent. So that is very interesting, because it says here is Krishna, he is everything, and here is Krishna's energy, and he exists separate from that energy. Well, that is confusing. And we wonder how to resolve it. But the other day here in Vraj, we went to Brahmandagat, and there we solved the issue along with Mother Yasoda, who is an expert philosopher. And Mother Yasoda, see, she was there, and there was an accusation that Krishna had eaten clay. So, you know, and Krishna said, this is politics. This is politics, it's absolutely not true, because we had a fight today. So they're just trying to get me in trouble, but the truth is that, you know, why would I do such a thing? You know, I have many tasty things to eat, why would I eat clay? I definitely didn't eat clay. And Mother Yasoda said, well, I'm not so sure. Then Krishna said, this is incredible. If my own mother doesn't trust me, if my own mother doesn't believe in me, then, if you don't believe, then you can look in my mouth. And Mother Yasoda, without hesitation, said immediately, open your mouth. And had a look in Krishna's mouth. And we were there at Brahmandagat, remembering how Srila Prabhupada was there at Brahmandagat, telling the story. And when Prabhupada was telling the story, Mother Yasoda saw then the whole universe in Krishna's mouth. Prabhupada's eyes became big and round. So Prabhupada saw the universe along with Mother Yasoda. Anyway, now Mother Yasoda did not just see the universe, but she also saw Krishna in that universe, and she also saw herself looking into the mouth of Krishna again, and in that mouth there was another universe and another Krishna and another Yasoda, and it's like going on and on like this. And so it was pretty much astounding. So Mother Yasoda was thinking, how is this thing happening to me? Is it that I'm going crazy? Maybe it's a sign of insanity. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in his commentary describes like that. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur continues, Mother Yasoda said, no, it cannot be that I've suddenly gone crazy because I have no history of madness, so that doesn't make sense. And I said, well, then is it maybe Deva Maya? Is it maybe the demigods who are doing this? No, that doesn't make sense either, because I'm just an ordinary woman, and why would the demigods do such things to me now? Suddenly. Doesn't make sense. No, it cannot be. And then, she said to herself, then, does it mean that my son is actually not my son, but as Garga Muni said, that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that and that I'm not the queen of all these residents of Vrindavan, and sort of like, you know, for a moment Mother Yasoda's head started spinning, and then Krishna was crawling on the ground, and he looked so cute, I guess. She just felt like picking him up and putting him on her lap, and again forgot that Krishna was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, the point is that the story is interesting because Krishna is clearly inside the universe. He's walking on earth and he's eating clay. So there's no doubt about it. There is the universe, planet Earth, and Krishna walking on top. And yet, the whole universe is within Krishna at the same time. This is exactly the purport to that Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva philosophy that is displayed in the first verse of Bhagavatam. Because it just establishes, that there is Krishna, and there's the energy of Krishna, and yet it is all within Krishna. It is all part of Krishna. So, a little bewildering, but Krishna is different than an ordinary person. He is omnipotent, omniscient, and omnibenevolent. What can we say? So, we cannot fully understand how Krishna works, but in his pastimes, he simply reveals it. So, this Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva is the Shakti Parinamavat of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's simultaneously one, but also many. Yes, there is. So in this way we understand Om in the Vaishnava context. In this way we understand that Om is actually referring to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Govindam Adi Purusham, the Adi Purush, from whom then so many things emanate. Parasya Shakti Vividaiva Suryate. So many energies are emanating from that Supreme Personality of Godhead. So in this way, we are happily saying Om Tat Sat. Om Tat Sat. For us, Om is referring to the lotus feet of Krishna. And Tat is worshipping those lotus feet, and Sat is meditating on the perfection of those lotus feet. Then I was also supposed to read the next verse, so let's do that as well. Tad ityanavi sanje daya phanam yakya tapa kriya dana kriyas cha vivida kriyante moksha kamsibi. Without desiring fruit of results, one should perform various kinds of sacrifices, penance and charity, with the word tat, so of making respectful offerings to the Lord. The purpose of such transcendental activities is to get free from material entanglement. Just as elsewhere in the Gita, yakyadanastapaschayava bhavaninam manissinam, or performing yakya, sacrifice, giving in charity, performing austerity, or even saintly persons are purified by such activities. And that is, therefore, this is also an activity for devotees. It's an ongoing activity. It is the natural activity of the of a Vaishnava who is soft-hearted, who is merciful, who is kind. We remember how Srila Prabhupada was walking in Mombasa, in Africa, in Kenya. Nice place. And they came past a house, and somehow or other, there was a big boundary wall about the rather large house. And then it was mentioned there, or they saw there, a tree that was built right into the wall. So Prabhupada stopped. And Prabhupada said, ah, here lives a Vaishnava. That is a Vaishnava. He did not cut the tree. Why would he cut the tree? He did not want to take the life. He just simply built the boundary wall against the tree. And from both sides, the boundary wall had to be there, but he did not kill the tree. That is Vaishnava. And so, yes, Vaishnava is by nature compassionate. And just as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was stating, so Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that such a Vaishnava is respectful to all living beings, not only to other Vaishnavas, but to all living beings. So that's quite something. To snakes.
Scorpion,
crocodiles, and other such creatures. Of course, in such case, respectful at a distance. You heard of being respectful at a distance, I think so. That's a good idea. So, although a Vaishnava is Pandita Samadarsinaha and is seeing all living beings with equal vision, and therefore is equally respectful to all living beings, because the Vaishnava sees the eternal position of all living beings. Not only just seeing that here we are dealing with eternal spirit souls, Vija Vinaya Sampani Brahmani Gavyastini Suni Chaita Swapakita Pandita Samadarshina. Not only seeing with equal vision that, oh yes, here are all spirit souls, but also seeing, especially seeing, Jivira Sarupai Krishna Nityanas, especially seeing that every living being is a devotee of Krishna. Every living being. And somehow or other, some have forgotten. So there's no question. Who is a devotee? Who's not a devotee? Is this a devotee? Is that a devotee? Amidst all these people, so many people, and only sometimes you see a devotee. No! There are only devotees. Only devotees everywhere. Everywhere. We'll only see devotees. Vija Vinaya Sampade. Because Krishna Nitya does. Every living being is a devotee. They just don't know. Somehow or other, they don't know who they are. They're suffering from acute forgetfulness, from amnesia. Somehow or other, they are lost in the wilderness of their mind, but their true self is devotee of Krishna. It is said that we cannot see ourselves without the help of the sun. Even the electric light is stored sunlight. So it is the sun that provides light in a universe that is otherwise dark. So we cannot see even ourselves without the light of the sun. So this is mentioned by Srila Rupa Goswami in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that in the same way, we cannot know ourselves unless we know ourselves in the relationship with Krishna. So that relationship may begin as a sadhaka, as a devotee who is performing devotional service in practice. But still, such a sadhaka, such a devotee who is following sadhana bhakti and is trying to make spiritual advancement, such a devotee begins with the premise, Krishna Nitya Das, I'm the eternal servant of Krishna. And at least in that way we know ourselves in the relationship with Krishna, that we are the eternal servant of Krishna. And that is something, eternal means it doesn't go away. There is no circumstance where we are not the servant of Krishna. No matter what happens, we're always the servant of Krishna and will always be the servant of Krishna, and nothing can change that. That is very significant and very important. That is Vaishnava. So, just as Raghupati Upadhyaya was looking at Brahman, at Om, right, and all these like constant reminders of the Upanishads, which are reminding us of how transcendence goes beyond matter. And Raghupati Upadhyaya was simply worshipping Nanda Maharaj and looking at Param Brahma, looking at Supreme Personality of Godhead, who plays like a child. Brahman is now playing like a child. Right? Parabrahman. Yes, not just Brahman, but the Supreme Brahman, the origin of all Brahman. That is Krishna. So, in this context, we understand that whereas others were worshipping out of fear, whereas others were constantly looking through philosophical eyes, always making things relative. Whatever you see, what is behind? We're looking here at circumstances in the world, nice day, not nice day, looking behind, the three modes of material nature are at work. Oh yes. And then Sankhya will give us a complete division. How there is an interaction between the senses and the sense objects. Yes. And not just the knowledge gaining senses, but also the working senses. Therefore the dasindriya, the 10 senses, and the five sense objects. And then we're adding other elements. And in this way, we see in Samkhya how everything is existing in this world and has a relationship with the Supreme Lord. And one can see through philosophical pursuits, one can see all the events that occur in the world as relative. So the philosopher is constantly practicing this and seeing things as relative. The devotee, the Vaishnava, the Vaishnava lives in ecstasy, lives in the transcendental, in relishing the transcendental pastimes of the Supreme Lord, and then seeing, yes, here is the Lord in his original form, performing amazing pastimes. And then, Parashashati Vivadaiva Suyade, then there are all the energies of the Lord. Fine. Jnanabhana Kriyacha. That is nice. But the essence is not the energy. It is not the energy that is important. At least not the material energy. Bhumira Bhungalo Vayu Kamana Bhuri Vacha Angamitya Main Vina Prakriti Rastada. The 8 separated energies of the Lord, the material energies, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, false ego, these are secondary. Aparevitastvanyam prakitim vidime param jiva bhutama bahu yayedam daryate jagat. And the living beings are the superior energy. But they waste their time, yayedam daryate jagat, by manipulating the material energy to squeeze as much enjoyment out of the material energy as they can. And that is the nature of the conditioned soul, who is always covered by lust. Ichchatrena samukteena dvandvameena bharata sarvatani samaham sarvyanti paramkipa. Every living being is taking birth in the delusion of desire and hate. So in this way, we are maneuvering through this philosophy. For the Vaishnavas, my analogy is the analogy of a cord. A cord with a tightrope walker. The tightrope is high in a tent, high in a circus tent. It's a dangerous drop. I mean, it gets silent in the tent now. The man goes onto the cord. It's like, it's going to be deadly. Deadly it is. It's dark. It's at night. There are lights on the man on the cord. But we don't really see the net that is under it in case he falls. There is a net which will catch him. So the cord is the pure transcendental platform. And on that pure transcendental platform, one is simply absorbed in Krishna. One is simply relishing Krishna. One is simply remembering Krishna. One is remembering Krishna's name. One is remembering Krishna's form. One is remembering Krishna's qualities. One is remembering Krishna's pastimes. And this is just an ongoing thing. And that is Vrindavan. That is what we are experiencing here. Everyone is absorbed in such remembrance of Krishna. And we make that remembrance of Krishna day by day more rich by learning more, exploring more about Krishna. There's so much to find out. So much. The acharyas have all given their angles, their stories, their insights, so many books to read. Right? All these books about Krishna to read. And Srila Prabhupada gives us everything, all the commentaries in the Bhagavatam, and in this, and he gives us 10th canto in the form of Krishna book. So many amazing, so much information about Krishna is there. And we can absorb ourselves in all that information. And that is not learning a lesson. Just like our Bhakti Shastri studies, our Bhakti Vaibhav studies, that's not kind of studying in the sense of learning some lesson and at the end you get an exam and you have to pass and then you get some duly stamped certificate. You do get all that when you do Bhakti Shastri and Bhakti Vaibhav. If you pass, you do get a certificate. But nobody does it for the certificate, I hope. You know, everyone does it to become absorbed, to explore, to find out more about Krishna. Because it's not enough to know that Krishna is all-attractive. One must know how he is all-attractive. Otherwise, incomplete. Krishna, what does it mean, Krishna? The all-attractive. And then, the all-attractive. Yeah? No. Then what? Well, he plays a flute. Oh, what flute does he play? Oh, he has many different kinds. Many. Little Venu he plays with 9 holes. But he also plays Murali, which is nicely decorated, sometimes a marble flute with a golden mouthpiece or some jewels even there. He plays Sammohini. He plays, finally, for the coward boys, he plays the Mahananda. That's a serious flute. And we're not messing around anymore. That's, if you know what I'm talking about, guys, that's a flute. So, like this, you know, Krishna's flutes are many, many different types. So we think we know about Krishna. But then there is so much more to know about Krishna. Somehow or other, the brahmacharis are sort of really close to me. I don't know if they feel protected that way or what it is. But I'll tell you one thing though, without making fun of the brahmacharis, let me say something good about them. And the one good thing, at least one good thing they have, they have good clothes. They're well dressed, isn't it?
Look at them.
Well dressed, yes. Many people might think they're well dressed, you know, I mean, some are different colors, this, that. But the brahmacharis are doing the best. And why is it so? Well, because their cloth is saffron. Okay, so, yes. But don't you know that the dust of at Krishna's lotus feet is saffron? Okay, there we go. 1-0 for the brahmacharis. We won.
Hare Krishna.
So, one might not have known before than the dust at Krishna's lotus feet. It's saffron. One might have known, but one might not have known. Right? Now say you didn't know. And that's from this day on, wow, suddenly you know the dust at Krishna's lotus feet is saffron. Throws a whole different dimension on saffron. Now, have you ever gotten the Charanamrita? And did you get the tulsi leaf? And did it get stuck in your throat? Huh? Have you had that? And so, tulsi leaf. Well, when you're a sannyasi, they want to really give you tulsi leaves, right? It's like you get hardly any Charanamrita, you get more tulsi leaf than Charanamrita. So there's lots of tulsi, and you're not even supposed to chew them, which is not difficult, not easy. I don't know how they do it. But anyway, you try to swallow the tulsi leaf and almost choke on it. And at such moments, we may not have full appreciation for the glories of tulsi. But then the Padma Purana helps us a little bit. Because the Padma Purana is explaining that in every leaf, in every tulsi leaf, all the tirthas of the whole universe are present. Give me another tulsi leaf. I've always been on the lazy side, and that sounds pretty good. Right? Instead of going to all those tirthas, I'll just take a tulsi leaf, please, anytime. You know? If anyone wants to bring me a tulsi leaf, go for your life. You know? I mean, tulsi garland, you know, what are you talking about? Anyway, so little by little, our vision changes. See? Once you read that in the Padma Purana, you can never look at a tulsi leaf in the same way. From that day on, a tulsi leaf has become, you know, something absolutely amazing. We always knew that it was special, that tulsi was very dear to Krishna and so on, but that all the holy places, the whole universe are in there, that's something. Can you ever look at a tulsi leaf just like a leaf again? Just all the holy places are there. So in this way we're expanding and expanding our understanding of Krishna in depth. And in this way we are going further and further away from just the dry understanding of the Upanishads. Yes, everything. Everything is spiritual. Yes, we know that. The poet Allen Ginsberg was in a conversation with Srila Prabhupada, and I like those conversations because Allen Ginsberg, he was not a disciple of Prabhupada. And therefore, disciples were often very submissive. So when Prabhupada gave an answer, then they would be quiet. But when Prabhupada gave an answer to Allen Ginsberg, he would ask more. And he would keep on asking, which of course we would also like to do, really, we would be afraid to do, but we would like to do. Anyway, so on this occasion, Allen Ginsberg was getting ready. And he said, many religions in the world are not accepting any image, any statue or any such form of the Lord, because their point is, how can spirit be captured in matter? And Prabhupada's answer was, see, so before I give the answer, Allen Ginsberg was rolling up his sleeves, you know, and getting ready for a real debate. You know, he's like, okay, this is going to be a good one, you know. Throw up the ball, you know, and like the Swami will play back, and then he was ready, you know, for a table tennis game, you know. And so he said, can spirit be captured in a material form? And Prabhupada said, matter does not exist. Bang, knockout immediately in the first stroke. You know, smashed him right there and then. There was nothing more to say. Matter does not exist. That is our understanding. Huh? Didn't Srila Prabhupada personally make the sketch that became the cover of the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam? And did he not draw Golok, Vrindavan, and Vaikuntha planets, and the Brahma Jyoti? And did he not give us a full understanding of the of the absolute truth. So yes, did Srila Prabhupada not explain that one corner of the spiritual world becomes covered, one corner of the spiritual sky becomes covered by a cloud of illusion, and we are perceiving it as the material world. But actually we are here in the spiritual world, if we can shed the illusion. So, didn't he explain like that? Yes, matter does not exist. Everything is spiritual. But now in this illusory domain, the material energy is manifesting a temporary nature. Of course, there is a law in physics, the law of conservation of energy, right? And that, like, the energy cannot be lost, it just transforms into something else. Of course, because it is the eternal energy of the Lord, so it cannot disappear. And nothing can disappear. Sometimes people have said to me, get lost. And I said to them, I would if I could, but I can't because I'm eternal. That's such a fact, you know. So in this way, we are appreciating the deeper meaning of Om Tat Sat, and how this meaning is establishing the Supreme Personality of Godhead in His eternal position, who is worshipped in various ways and offered all respect, and who reveals His transcendental qualities, which are unlimited in nature. And in that way, we will, in an unlimited way, throughout our lives, throughout eternity, explore Sat, the unlimited qualities of the Absolute Truth. And with that, we're very happy to now conclude and see if there are any questions or comments.
You mentioned about the flutes.
The flute which holds the gopis at dead of night. Vamsi, Vamsi vat. But it's supposed to be that generally Krishna is playing his venam when in dealing with the gopis, the smaller flute. Generally speaking, yeah. But sometimes he plays Murali. I'm not sure what he is playing exactly at Vamsivat, because it's called Vamsivat, right? I don't recall that it's one particular flute, but it's either Venu or Murali that he generally plays in his relation with the gopis. So it is Murali.
You were talking about Allen Ginsberg, and some of the religions don't like any form, and then other ones say that what we have is just an idol, but what they have is a religious icon. Well, why can't it be the other way around, or just as good? Why do they think that it's...
Can you explain the religious icon?
Well, they have like the statue of Jesus, or the Virgin Mary, and they... worship
that, but then they say that we have is just a statue. But if
you see how they treat Jesus and how we treat the deity, they treat more like a statue than we do.
Yeah. You know, when you go to Spain or to Italy, yes, then you see these little chapels, yes, and there they are having altars, and it's almost deity worship. I mean, you feel like you're in a temple. You know, it's really like they are completely worshipping these forms. Whatever we may say about other traditions, right? Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was speaking about the religion of the Yavanas, he was saying the Yavanas were, you know, meat eaters, right? So there are two world religions in that category particularly. And there, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said there, their scriptures are obscure and full of incomplete conclusions. So that's enough for us, you know, when we're entering into dialogue with those traditions. We expect to find shortcomings, we expect to find incomplete understanding or misunderstanding. It is to be understood. In Jiva Dharma, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is describing how the sages in Godrum, who were living there at the time, how a group of Muslims came one day to discuss with them, because these sages were great devotees, and how they discussed the deity form. There is an explanation there about the transcendental nature of the deity form, that even in the Quran there is some recognition of some sort of transcendental form. And of course, you know, when we are in a discussion with a Muslim, we can ask them why they bow down five times a day, why they do namaz. Yeah? And so, religious duty, that's the Quran.
Say, well, and say, yeah, but...
And what are you bowing down to? So, in the direction of Mecca, okay? And then, what are you actually bowing down to in Mecca? And ultimately, they're bowing down to the Kaaba. And when they do their big gathering, the main thing of the whole, what you call the Hajj, the whole thing of going to Mecca is, you know, where the highways are leading into Mecca, and then there's a sign, traffic signs above the road, and it says, Muslims, straight, and non-Muslims, next exit. Interesting. And traffic signs, proper traffic signs, I saw the movie. But anyway, then you come to the holiest of holy shrines, and there's the Kaaba. And the Kaaba is some sort of icon, some sort of stone, whatever it is. There's been a lot of argument about that. And some devotees say, oh, it's a Shiva Lingam. I say, that's nice, you know. I mean, turn it into a Shaligram Shila next time. You know? Whatever you want it to be, it will be, you know. But the point is that is not... That is funny for the iconoclasts, the one who are not accepting any image of this and that. But in the end, they're worshipping an image. There it is, in the Kaaba. Could you please explain that to me, sir?
You say that they're meaning in scripture, but if you Google vegetarianism in the Bible, there's more than 53 different things that say you should be vegetarian.
Okay, we're going back to the Bible. Yeah, well, you know, Satya Raj did a nice book on that, right? You know, it called Is That in the Bible? And he makes the case, a nice case there for vegetarianism in the Bible. There are also, but there is also the video of the Cardinal Danilou who says to Srila Prabhupada, but what will we do for the poor children? You know, in India, the children are starving, and can we give them the cows? You know, I can't understand why we should not feed them the flesh of the cow if we have to save the lives of the children. So what you got to say? You don't care about children? You don't love children? Just, you can tell us openly, right? Huh? You do. But then the poor children are starving, Prabhuji. And you are not caring. You care more for an animal than for a human being. Please, can you clarify this point?
Actually, it takes it takes less energy to create grain food than it does to create beef. You use up more grain to make beef. So that's a fallacy.
Okay. Good answer. 30 kilos of grain to feed one such animal. So use the grain and give that to the children. Yes. Don't cry, children. We will feed you. Okay, you already had a goal. Yeah. Loud and clear.
You're describing the transmitter platform as a high tightrope.
High tightrope. Oh, and I didn't explain the net. The net is the mode of goodness. The net is the philosophy. So the tightrope is the tightrope of ecstasy, the tightrope of Krishna consciousness. Now, in the beginning, when we are only up there as a sadhaka, then the tightrope is very narrow. And we may need a danda, a stick, to keep our balance. But when we are getting more ecstatic, then the path is getting wider and wider, day by day. For the Prema Bhakta, it's like a highway, you know, up in the sky. But anyway, in case we fail to remain on the pure transcendental platform, then we return to the platform of the mode of goodness and to the platform of philosophy. So then we start to relativize what we see. Then when you are in the body of a young man and you look at the body of a young girl, then you say, yes, but we are not young men, we are not young girl. The eternal spirit soul, we're in temporary material bodies, and you know, life is very short and very, very fleeting. And of course, we are now controlled, since we're in the body, by the pushings of the senses. But is it really worth it to get into the pushings of the senses? Rather, you know, it would be better to focus on the eternal. In this way, a brahmachari, a brahma achari, is thinking, I'm not the body. Right? And disconnecting from all that sensual dictation through philosophy. Because he needs to take shelter of the net of goodness instead of dancing on the cord of transcendental ecstasy. 6 o'clock. Yes, Hare
Krishna. Without the selling for the results.
Now, say it a little louder because it couldn't. Which translation? Last one?
Second verse.
Without desiring fruitive results?
I want to talk to this. Without desiring fruitive results means what? How come Guru Maharaj? Guru Maharaj?
Yes, okay. We drew Maharaj. I'm well prepared for this lecture because I was just at Dhruva Tila a couple of days ago. But Dhruva Maharaj is was approaching the Lord with some material desire. But he was approaching the Lord through the blessings of Narada Muni. Narada Muni had given him instructions of what to do, how to attain the Lord. And he told him, you make a deity out of clay. You perform Ashtanga Yoga to control the senses. And you chant Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So Narada Muni gave him a full sadhana, knowing that he was a Sakama Bhakta, a Bhakta with material desires, but giving him the holy name, giving him the worship of the deity, and giving him additional Ashtanga Yoga to control the senses. In this way, Narada made arrangements for Dhruva to become purified. So Dhruva was getting purified throughout the process. Even so much so that when he had the darshan of the Lord, then he lost his last remaining material desire. So he was gradually purified to the point that the Lord revealed himself to him, and then he was purified from the last little bit of material desire. So that is the nature of the sadhaka. So Dhruva was a sadhaka. Just as it's not possible to come out of a conditioned state without material desires. If anyone says, I don't have any material desires, suspicious. You know, this person is not with the feet on the ground. But if someone is saying, you know, I am very carefully taking shelter of Krishna so that I will not fall prey to material desires, that is safe. That is the safe platform. So, akama sarva kama va moksha kama udara iti vena bhakti yogena yeyeta purushantaram. Whether we have material desires, whether we don't have material desires, we fully apply ourselves to the process of bhakti and everything will come. And some devotees, they see the pastimes of Krishna directly, and others hear it through the scripture. But there is no difference. No difference. Same thing. Whether we are Sakama Bhakta and hear through scripture, or whether we are Niskama Bhakta, and whether we are Parisat and able to directly perceive the Supreme Lord, we are all situated in the pure transcendental position. Yes.
Thank you, Maharaj, for a wonderful class. This last sloka which you just now quoted.
This last
sloka which you quoted, I always have a doubt that Prabhupada talks about Kriya Bhakti as having without any admixture of karma and jnana.
Uh-huh.
But sloka says akama sarva kama.
Yes.
We may have other desires, but we can do Kriya Bhakti.
Yes.
So I always am not able to understand that if I have other desires, how can I have do Kriya Bhakti? Because Kriya Bhakti means without any aspiration for karma and jnana.
Yeah. Tivra means undiluted. Tivra bhakti is also a comparison to the sun, you know, like the sunshine on a completely full sunshine without any shelter. So the way I take it is Tivra bhakti means the pure process of devotional service. In other words, that whether one has material desires or doesn't have material desires, one should fully situate himself in the process of bhakti. And that is tivra bhakti. If one is only partially situating himself, then it is not tivra bhakti. Tivra bhakti means fully dedicating oneself to the process without deviation. That is the idea. Then it is not referring to the inner state of consciousness, because how can you be sakama? Right? And having other, then you're not anya abhilasita sunya. So that's not uttama bhakti. So it's not speaking about the internal state of uttama bhakti. Tivra bhakti is not the same as the uttama bhakti in Rupa Goswami's verse. Cannot be, because the sakama contradicts that. Therefore, it can only refer to the process that we externally situate ourselves fully in the process. And as we say, what is the point of everything will be burned in the fire of bhakti? Or we are taking baths, what is the point of seeing dirt on the body when it's being washed? What is the point of criticizing the wood that is in the fire? This wood is full of cracks. This wood is not pure. This wood has holes. No, this wood is really not like of a good quality at all. Don't worry, it's burning in the fire of bhakti. It will very soon be ashes. Therefore, akama sarva kama va tivra bhakti. As long as the wood is in the fire, it will burn to ashes, whatever imperfections there are. So the sakama will go. It will become akama. It will be ashes. Okay, thank you very, very much, Prabhupada.